Accession number 31050, reel 3.
How were you quartered when you were down in Bodmin?
Quartered.
Oh, we were billeted about 3 miles from the railway line. We were hired bicycles from the Ministry of Supply at a shilling a week to cycle, and then we had to cycle along the railway line, which was a hazardous business if you happened to turn your wheel in the wrong direction. And so it was about 4 miles to get there. The landlady was very good to us. She was quite a young woman, about 26, disabled, with a small boy. We had plenty of food, as I say, because our admirers used to bring down a dozen eggs and that sort of thing, and she encouraged them.
The male admirers, you mean?
Yes, well, there were soldiers about, of course. We had no running water. We had a well and a bucket. We had no electricity, no gas, and no toilet. We had a botty sort of place with a bucket at the corner of the garden, which of course was hard at middle of the night on a cold night. It was not comfortable, and we never had baths, but eventually we got baths at the Bodmin Asylum for threepence a go, and I used to get the key from the reception and pay the money, and we used to troop through locking the doors as we went, unlocking and locking them up, to a multiple bathroom, and we all had our baths there for threepence. I rather think that coming out of there on a cold night probably set off my illness, which caused me to leave the beauty of Dunmere behind.
What were your wages at that stage?
The wages were, I had £2 11 shillings a week. I don't remember what Mavis got as foreman. I should think she got £3. The girls got £2 5 shillings a week. The other people were mostly piecework. We gave our landlady £1 5 shillings a week out of that. We had our shilling bicycle to pay, and of course our national, well, it wasn't national health stamp, but our health stamp out of it too, so we never got a great deal. And £2 11 was exactly the fare from Bodmin to Paddington return, and that was my wage. We had two vouchers to travel a year home. We got one, we got a couple of new dungarees every year, a couple of pairs of socks and a couple of shirts, and a new pair of boots every year. The boots were solid, soled, nailed horseshoe boots, but once you got them on, you knew you'd stand up in them whatever happened. Our washing arrangements in the morning were a bowl outside the kitchen window, and our flannels were nearly always in the winter frozen, and we usually looked at them and decided that was enough for the day and went off. And our washing was really, really bad. But the girls often went in the river. I didn't go in the river. Somewhere I've got a picture or two of the river with the girls splashing. It was very, very, very cold water in that river. It was a salmon river. We saw the salmon at the weir. It was quite an education in natural events there. The trees, I did learn all the trees. I still know most of them today. And the flowers, some things I've never seen since, and they often had common names which didn't tie up with anything that you'd ever heard of. and saw quite a lot of birds' nests and things, because the boys were good at that. Would take you around to see what they'd found. I often asked the names of plants and they didn't know them. I've done that recently too. Birds, we had a lot of... Oh, we had one wonderful incident where a blue tit had come in through the office, a wood knot in the office wall, and had flown into a wood knot in a cupboard and nested in a Wellington boot, and had seven beautiful little blue tits in there in the top of a Wellington boot. Went to get the Wellington boots out, you see, and it was full of baby birds, so we had to let them stay. And then I was walking along the railway line and there was one of these little blue tits all on its own, and I caught it and brought it back to the nest thinking it was one of ours, and ours were all in there. And the next morning it was sitting on the side of the nest and all the others were in the nest, but that day they all went and sat on a tree branch with the mother and the father each end and the little spare one on the end. So we did learn some nature while we were there. And we had Jenny Wrens nested sometimes in the stacks of cordwood. And you see them go in through the sort of gaps. And yes, and we used to, of course all the wood, the cordwoods in Lentz Hat were sold as, I don't know what, firewood or things like that, but the leaves all had to be burnt, all the small stuff had to be, so there were always fires, there was always blue smoke. Oak wood is very pungent and blue. Our hands were always dyed blue with handling it. I think it must be what the ancient men of Britain wore, you know, woad or whatever they call it. But it got in your veins, it took in the lines in your hands, it took you a week to get it out. Wearing Vaseline, cotton gloves and things all night. Filthy stuff. Julie, my person I lived with, billeted with at Blanche Buzzers, she had come from a beauty salon. Her sister ran a beauty salon, so she was very blonde, curl hair, and very beautiful nails, but we soon all got very tattered with this work. And one famous day, when the Americans were there, and we'd run a Timbercore branch for the charity, we ran a Timbercore dance down at the town hall. And I was persuaded to go because I had to collect the money. I didn't normally go to the dances. So I had to go in my uniform to show it was a Timbercore dance and we were taking the money in for the charity. And coming back, they were friendly with the Colonel's batman, and the Colonel's batman had the Colonel's car, and they ran us out to Llanivet where we were billeted. And they had to cross the stream, and they got the car stuck in the stream, and we had to push the, it was a great special sort of princess something or the other car with straps and things we'd never seen in cars before, if we'd been in cars at all. And we had to push it out, and as it skidded in the mud, we got covered with mud. And I remember Julie's beautiful blonde curls in the morning, sitting up in bed with all this mud stuck in her hair, and all our beautiful coats, which we kept so nicely, never taking them to the woods, were covered with mud splashes. But they made a great deal of use of the Colonel's batman, I must say. And the Colonel's batman said they were up all night cleaning the Colonel's car for him in the morning after that episode. But they were very friendly, the Americans, and the girls went to all the dances on Saturday nights. And Then they used to go to Bodmin. I often minded the little boy at the house while they went to Bodmin, to St Austell for the pictures on Saturdays. We only had one Saturday and two off. We worked all day one Saturday and were off the next Saturday. So in some of the marches, the salute the soldier and that sort of thing, I'm not there because I'm minding the rest down at the works, so to speak. And that also happened over Blanche, and because Blanche was very good to us, so I didn't really care much about going to the pictures, so I would be minding the little boy, and Julie couldn't stand the boy because he was spoilt. And of course her husband was in Tobruk and those places, so it was sad for her too. It was a very good experience of dealing with different people. We had one little elderly man who was very enamoured of Julie and I. He used to come down on his bicycle saying, "How do you do?" and produce a nice chicken or something. It was quite sad, really. And then there was some Air Force boys that used to come from, what is it called, that place at the end, something Rose. There was those big pylons that the Air Force had right down at the end. Anyway, they were working there. They used to come down to see us. I think the Timber Corps were, on the whole, quite an attraction to Bodmin.
There wasn't any sort of resentment at the influx of...
I don't think so, no. The girls used to go to the pubs quite a bit and sing things. So they knew all the songs off by heart, and they used to do a bit of, you know, improvising. They were a very jolly lot, I must say. You never, for all that we, the hard time we had there very often. I mean, the mud was sometimes at the cutting end. The horses would churn, drag the logs down, and the mud would churn up in October, November, that sort of area. It would be very, very muddy, and you'd be plastered with mud. And if you had no way of washing, it was really quite hard. You could let your dungarees dry and pick it off. It was quite hard.
How did the girls adapt to the hardship?
Well, they were all so very... They were all such fun. A lot of the North Country. The one I was with was from Liverpool. Well, I shall ring her tonight and tell her about you. And she'll laugh and laugh about it all. Never stopped laughing about it since. I mean, it was amazing, really. The Americans used to come down to the wood, too. When I first got there, the Duke of Cornwall Light Infantry were moving out, and then the barracks were refurbished or something for a week or so, and then the American, I think it was their 8th Army, I think, as far as I recall, moved in. And of course they were a great source of attraction all round, because if you went into Bodmin you met up with them at the YMCA or anywhere. They were everywhere. I found them quite difficult. I think they had no conversation. I don't know what it was, but I can't tell you, but you know, they rather bored me. One I did meet was very good, was a Polish airman. He had a lot of conversation. It's so strange, the difference. And we had lots of lifts from them, you know, back of a truck. "We shall make room for you, missy," as Julie said. "Oh, but you're full up." A whole truck of black boys. Julie said, "Oh, but you're full. We shall make room for you, missy," they said, "and haul us up into this truck." I mean, you wouldn't do it today, would you? Sitting on the back of a motorbike, or getting into a lorry that had its door on with a piece of string. Just unhook the string. We had some precarious lifts. That was when the bicycles broke down. They were breaking down all the time. Julie still owes 5 shilling fine for riding without lights on her bike.
Was there any sort of official Land Army policy regarding fraternising or not with
I've certainly never heard of it. I think the girls were all pretty sensible. I don't think anybody got into bed with anybody. It was pretty kind of, you know, a bit of a kiss or a snug here, but nothing really. I mean, most of them had boyfriends somewhere else. That was the thing. They only did it for a bit of company, you know. And Julie wrote every week to somebody called Tom Billingford, but she didn't marry him in the end. I had a rather nice officer that I was friendly with, but that didn't come to anything either in the end. But war is a funny business. I mean, you meet up with so many different people all the time on trains. Sometimes coming back from Bodmin at a bank holiday time, when like Christmas, something like that, I've actually got on a train with a dozen eggs from Vic Williams, one of his offerings, or a large bunch of daffodils, all picked from some landed estate that he had control over, and got them squashed to bits because there wasn't room to put your feet on the floor, let alone for soldiers and everybody in the train. I remember one journey from Bodmin going via Bath and Bristol, which was a long night, picking it up at 8 o'clock at Bodmin Road, which it was then, it's now called Bodmin something else now, but it used to be Bodmin Road then, and having, you know, not having got both feet on the floor most of the journey. You've got to be pretty tough to do it, because you got in about 6 in the morning. It stayed about an hour at Bristol, but nobody got off. Only people only got on these trains. Terrible. The journeying was really fearful. And then you had to get a train from Bodmin Road to Bodmin with your luggage, and then get down to the wood to start your day's work. If you got there at 6 o'clock in the morning, if you were coming back, you had to get down there somehow or other, carrying your luggage on foot from Bodmin. It was quite difficult terrain, really, very hilly. Our woods were on slopes like that. But they came down to the Camel, you see, and then went up the other side. See if I've got anything else that I put down.
You mentioned the cinema, but how else did you spend your off-duty and leisure time?
I never went to the cinema. Never. I did a bit of drawing or something, if I could, you know, if I had Brian Butter to look after, I might do that. But on the whole, you were too tired, you know, to do any drawing. But they liked the cinema. I never grew up on the cinema, you see. We went, the one time we did go, if it was 4 hours of rain in the morning and we got wet, we did have a bit of a, you know, shed to shelter in, but if we really got wet, and anyway you'd get very wet going home, if we had 4 hours of rain, we were rained off, and we would then go down to Bodmin Cinema for a shilling to dry off, because we had nowhere to dry our wet things in our billet, you see. There was an oven, you know, fed with coal and wood, but with two of us with soaking wet clothes, you couldn't really get them dry for the morning. And so we used to sit in the cinema in our wet clothes and dry off. You don't wonder you got ill, do you? The marvel is we lasted so long.
You mentioned that you hadn't been used to the sunlight.
No, I haven't.
Were most of the girls from an urban background?
Yes, I think Mary and Muriel were from Halifax. Julius from Liverpool. Mavis, she was from Wales. I've forgotten where she came from. But we were all more or less townies, yes. Peggy came from London. One or two of course, the local boys were all local. A lot of local people worked with us. We did quite well there too, because one of the women's parents had a shop, and we got a few bags of sugar for Christmas and that sort of thing. You know, it was a lot more things about down there than there were in London. Too many people in London. I don't remember really suffering any hardship through the rationing, you know, or the food. Although, of course, it went on into the 50s, didn't it? And at some point or other, I had to give up some of our bread ration because the Germans were starving after the war. I thought that was a very noble act, that we gave up our bread ration to the starving Germans. And then they de-rationed sweets, and then they had to put them back on ration again. I think sweets were about the last to go. I think everybody had been used to rationing in there wherever they were. And I think we found it was quite healthy down there.
You mentioned pit props.
Oh yes, we count pit props. Good living condition. The pit props were 3 foot, 4 foot, 6 foot, and 9 foot. If you were loading them in trucks, we had very few 9 foot because we didn't have the circumference for a 9 foot prop. But where there was, say, something in the way that had to come down, or the Forestry Commission that were replanting wanted it down, then that would come down and that would go in. So we did load one or two trucks of nines. And that was very hard work. You had to put skids down to control them down the embankment. You see, the River Camel was down there. The railway line was next to it. And it gradually went up. So an embankment was cut in above the railway line so that we could put a skid in, two skids, and roll a truck down into the... prop down into the truck. And, of course, 4 foots, 3 foots, almost anybody could load those. You just sort of chuck them in and somebody stacked them neatly. I used to do all the paperwork for that. But in the meantime, I would also cut props or do whatever else I needed doing. As I say, they went to Welsh collieries, and one I remember was in Kent, which seemed quite strange, but I do think there were coal mines in Kent at one time, weren't there? I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but I'm sure there were. I came across one once when we were travelling around. We had a visit every now and again from a man who ran that very end bit of the country, who was at Launceston. He sometimes came down with the money to pay the wages with, because of course we didn't keep any money in the office, as it was known. And occasionally we had one of the big wigs from Exeter. But when I went to Taunton and did my secretarial work for the area manager there, Claude Watson, I was just like a secretary, really. although he went out to his woods every day, and I had a wood nearby that I could cycle out to, which I went to sometimes, but the girls didn't really want somebody else out there. It was like, you know, if we had, if down in our bit of the woods, we'd got somebody coming in, we'd think they might be a spy or something. But occasionally we got a big wig down, Mr. Pointer, he was the big wig there, when they wanted a nice ride out in the country, I think. But when I was working in Taunton, I also had to work out the statistics for the month. Every month you had to work out, I'm not quite sure what I did work out, but it was one of those things where you worked out how much one man produced over the whole area. I think it was for one day, but it might have been a week or it might have been a month. I'm not really certain about that now, but I know it was a great screed of numbers that you had to produce, and you could never do that in office time because, you know, it was too much. I used to take that home to do. I quite liked statistics. I was part of my ability was in statistics. I had done bookkeeping and commercial arithmetic and all that stuff at the City of London College, which is now a university.
Having seen the invasion fleet all prepared, yeah, and hearing of the D-Day action and so on, what was your reaction to the...
Well, I was very concerned with people I knew that were going to be in it, and of course the girls were too, for their American friends, because they made some very good friendships with the Americans. And in fact, Mavis Williams, the forewoman, the person she was engaged to was an American, although she broke it off. He was wounded. He came up to Plymouth or somewhere, and she went to see him and was off about a week for that. But yes, one was very concerned for all the people one knew that were going over there. I mean, it was a very frightening scene. I really cannot understand how the Germans didn't know it was going to happen. There were so many ships, so many hundreds and hundreds of ships, and I don't exaggerate, I was really absolutely astounded by it. And of course that's only a small bit of the coast. It was because you've got headlands both sides of that break in the railway line as it goes into the tunnel, and apparently the whole channel was full of ships.
Had you been aware before seeing this of the preparations for an invasion?
Well, I think we heard various sort of rumours on the grapevine, but I don't think we were really geared up about the landing, the Mulberry Harbours and things. I don't think... I mean, people in the know knew, but we down there didn't really get much knowledge of that sort of thing. And I don't think I could see a Mulberry Harbour, even if I'd looked for one, but as I didn't know they were there. And, I mean, we were on it was awful that first 3 or 4 months when we were held in that peninsula bit, and they didn't seem to, and the Americans were going right round down below, because that wasn't Vichy France, was it? The lower bit wasn't so occupied by the Germans, and the French and the Americans just went right through that, and we were stuck up there on that fighting bit at the top. Well, I think the Americans were everywhere, but we seemed to have more of our men up in that top corner. And then we had that awful Eindhoven business, which was also a very nasty it was a bridge too far, wasn't it? A very nasty bit of fighting there.